Hello and happy Thanksgiving, y'all. We've got a great episode for you today, all about Harry and Marv from the Home Alone movies. A great way to kick off the holiday season. One of my favorite films growing up. But before we jump into that, just a couple quick things I wanted to talk about. First, our podcast is all about empathy and taking the time to think about other perspectives. And so because Thanksgiving was just a few days ago, I thought it would be a good time just to remember that we need to reflect on our history in the United States in respect to indigenous cultures. You know, a lot of us learn in school about this peaceful meal that happened between the quote-unquote pilgrims and Indians, but the real story is much darker and involves a long history of violence and manipulation against Native people in order to take their land and their rights. So I encourage you all to do your own research, and this holiday season, give back to Indigenous organizations. I encourage you to find organizations that represent the Indigenous cultures around the area where you live. I really believe in giving to local organizations as much as possible. And there's tons of research out there, tons of resources you can Google, but a couple of podcasts that I recommend that have just some really great education on them. One would be a podcast called All My Relations, and the other is called This Land. And of course, there are others out there, but those are the two that I really like. So check that out. And the second announcement is that we now have merchandise. So we've got t-shirts, stickers, magnets, mugs, all the sorts of stuff you'd expect from a podcast. And in a few different designs, we've got one for this episode. It's got a picture of Harry and Marv, and it says, "I like my bandits wet and sticky." That's an inside joke for big fans of Home Alone or anyone who's listened to this episode of our podcast. We've also got a sticker that says, "Hello, my name is Batty." That was Tiana's design, and some other cool things as well. So check that out. There's a link in the show notes for this episode, and also you can find a link to our merch on our website as well. So yeah, I think that's all the business, and now we're going to jump right into this episode, and hope you enjoy.
Marv!
Harry?
Where the hell did you take your shoes off?
Why the hell you dressed like a chicken?
I'm up here, you morons! Come and get me! You guys give up, or you're thirsty for more?
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity. Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to Next Door Villain. This week, we are discussing Harry and Marv, a.k.a. the Wet Bandits, a.k.a. the Sticky Bandits, of the Home Alone series.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they get the award for the most nicknames,
I suppose.
Yep.
And really terrible nicknames, too.
Yeah, the Wet Bandits.
Yeah, that
sounds like
it's disgusting.
Wet blanket. And then also, like, Harry gets mad at Marv, like, "Why are we called that?" They're like, "Yeah, because I like to turn the kitchen sink on and flood the place, and it's wet." LOL. Creativity is not their strong suit, okay?
No, not at all.
Well, I'm excited to do this because it's also a blast from the past, from our childhoods.
Yeah. I know a lot of people watch Home Alone and Home Alone 2 Lost in New York during the holiday season, but I had not actually watched it since I was very, very young. So this was a revisit for me, and it was a lot more fun than I remember.
Yeah. Well, to me, it was more exciting when I was younger.
Right.
Yeah, because the pranks were more impressive when you're little. But when I saw the pranks this time, I was like, okay.
I was honest. I was more impressed now because I was thinking about, like, what would it take for me to pull off some of this stuff? And I don't think I would have even conceived of a lot of the things that Kevin does. Let alone actually execute them to perfection.
Well, I had a lot of questions, like, how did he get enough string to like string up all of these cardboard cutouts of people in the window and like move all of them at once.
That's your how did he get enough string? That's your biggest concern.
Yeah. How did he do that? Where did he find this stuff? I guess it's a big house. You can find like a random cutout of Michael Jordan in the basement.
Yeah. Hey, they're obviously immensely wealthy, so.
Obviously, yeah. We'll get into that too.
Yeah. But before we do, maybe we should give our listeners a little bit of a intro to the characters, refresher, so they can remember who they are.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. We're going to compete to see who gives the best synopsis of the characters,
yeah,
as we always do.
Yeah. We each get 30 seconds to give our best synopsis of the characters. And then you can go on to our Twitter at NextDoorVillain and vote for who did a better job. There's no real winners or losers, but there are bragging rights.
There are. Yep. Yeah. Our poll ended about Helga Pataki, and Joe won, and it was a rightful win. So good job.
Thank you.
Young lad.
One of my greater accomplishments in life.
3 votes on Joe and he won. That's your greatest accomplishment. Yep. Yeah. All right. Who's going first?
I can go.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. Harry and Marv are 2 criminals. Harry is this shorter guy and Marv is taller and skinnier. Marv is not nearly as smart. He kind of just does what Harry tells him to. And their kind of shtick is that they rob houses while people are away during the Christmas holidays, and they leave the sinks on and flood the place when they're done. So they call themselves the Wet Bandits. And they're not all that smart. And
ding, ding. All right. Good job.
Thank you.
I think this is the first time that one of us has described what they look like.
Really?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if that was so important to you, but it is.
The problem here is that the movie gives us almost no information about their actual backgrounds.
Right. And so it was actually an advantage that you went first, I think, because I don't know what else to add at this point. Well, I'll think of something.
Yeah, but you'll have to. Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Go.
All right. So Harry and Marv, they really, really want to they really want to break into Kevin's house. And we're not quite sure why, but they really like doing this thing where they flood the houses after they steal stuff from it by turning on the faucet and letting it go and then flooding the house. And therefore, that's why they're called the Wet Bandits. And but they're kind of dumb in a way, and they're not very smart. Like they just kind of go for it and get badly hurt. The end.
Nice. I ran out of time, but I meant to shift to the sequel, Home Alone 2, and talk a little bit about their lives as the Sticky Bandits.
Oh yeah.
So they after Home Alone 1, they are arrested. Obviously,
that seems trying to break sexual. Into... I don't.
It's not. It's not.
So first, it's wet, and then it's sticky. I don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
And honestly, maybe I wasn't watching closely enough, but I really didn't understand why they were the Sticky Bandits, except that Harry had, I don't know what he had on his hands, but he had something sticky all over his hands.
No, now I can't get the image out of my head.
Right, it sounds more sexual the more he has something sticky on his hands, and he reaches into one of those charity pots and pulls his hand out, and he's got all the coins stuck to his hands, and that's when he's like, oh, we're gonna be the Sticky Bandits now.
Where the hell did he get sticky stuff to put on his hands?
I don't know. Maybe I just missed it. But somehow he...
I'm like, I'm dying. Okay.
So they break out of prison, and the second film, they get to New York, and they're going to rob this toy store. And it turns out, just so happens, Kevin, this little punk kid, is there trying to ruin their plans again.
And so, but this is all in New York City, so it's crazy how, like, there's so many people, and they just happen to run into each other, and it's really bad luck.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that one of the things people love the most about Home Alone is seeing all of the crazy, ridiculous things that Kevin builds in order to prevent these robbers from breaking into his home. Mm-hmm. So, for example, he has these paint cans that he attaches to wires, and then when they're walking up the stairs, he drops the paint cans and it hits them in the head. He puts tar on the staircase so they slip and fall.
The freakiest one is the spider. They like puts a spider on their
face. Yeah, he puts a spider on their face. Hey, really, really malicious things. Mm-hmm. But more than that, really deadly things.
Yeah, they are really deadly. And on one hand, I mean, someone listening to this podcast is probably like, well, you can't really blame Kevin for like defending himself, right? But also at the same time, it's like, why didn't they just fix their phone lines and call the police? I don't know if doing all of this injury is really justified completely. And I felt really bad, like, at the very end of the first Home Alone film, it's like Christmas Day or something, and they're in a cop car because they got caught. Finally, they were like, okay, the police has to deal with this. And they're all, like, beaten up very badly, and Kevin waves to them, and they're waving back in the car, and it looks very sad. On Christmas Day, they're, like, in a cop car, all beat up, and you're like, oh, a little bit. You're like, oh, like, they have to spend Christmas, like, in jail and dealing with all these wounds, and it's, maybe they just should have just gone to jail and not be so beat up.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder about Kevin's upbringing, that his response to criminals trying to break into his house was that he more or less tries to torture and potentially murder them, mm-hmm. rather than going to the police. Or right. going to his neighbor, or going to his church, or going...
Yeah.
Literally, like, to any adult to help out.
Also, like, Harry and Marv have the right to the Sixth Amendment, that everyone has the right to a fair and speedy trial. And this just sounds like torture without any trial, all right? So Kevin is not the just trial.
Right. We've decided as a society, most of us have, at least... that there's a standard for how we should treat those who are mm-hmm. incarcerated or those who have done wrong. Mm-hmm. And most reasonable people have decided that torturing mm-hmm. wrongdoers is not a good thing.
Kevin doesn't think Kevin so.
No. And we know that Kevin is not a great judge of character so remember, he has a neighbor who like is a very kind old man because he's going around and he lays salt on the sidewalks to keep people from slipping and falling. But Kevin and his siblings think that this guy is like this crazy murderer mm. who uses salt to preserve the bodies. And so they're all terrified of him. When it turns out, he's just like this really nice guy.
Yeah.
And we get to know him a little more intimately later in the film. And he's just this nice, caring old man. So this is a example of Kevin not being a great judge of character mm-hmm. and not bothering to spend the time to think about other people's point of views or perspectives or try to empathize with them. Kevin's reaction is simply to cause as much harm as possible.
Right. Well, my theory was kind of like, if I were Harry and Marv and this kid was like using all of these booby traps to like try and get me out, it would motivate me even more to try and like rob the house, I think. Like, I think it kind of like fuels their persistence and motivation to keep trying to do it.
Yeah.
I think that if he would have just like called the cops, or if they would have had like a normal security system, they would have just kind of ran away and buggered off. But it's just kind of like, I don't know. And then on the other hand, of course, Kevin is a kid, so he just did not really think through any of this. But on the other hand, he's smart enough to think of all these booby traps. So you'd think he'd be smart enough to kind of think through the fact that he could just talk to an adult and... have them run away. Yeah, I don't know.
Kevin's an odd kid. One thing that was particularly odd about him to me is that he was unable to pack his own suitcase. That's like the thing he's whining about first thing in the movie. He's unable to pack a suitcase, but he's able to create these incredibly intricate contraptions to stop these criminals from breaking into his home.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was possessed or something. I don't
Right. And to be clear, we're not trying to justify the actions of these criminals breaking into this home. We're just merely saying that maybe it's okay to feel a little bit bad that they were tortured and humiliated and they were caused enough pain that they potentially could have died.
So mental floss, they talk to a doctor, a medical doctor, about Harry and Marv's injuries. Basically, he just watched the film and just analyzed the impact of what their injuries. And at the kind of at the end of the article, the doctor is like, Harry and Marv have very serious head and foot injuries. And this is very concerning. And for example, the iron to the face part, yeah, where Kevin strings down an iron that lands on Marv's face and badly injures him and he falls down. This is what the doctor says. He's like, let's estimate the distance from the first floor to the basement at 15 feet and assume the steam iron weighs 4 pounds. And note that the iron strikes Marv squarely in the mid-face. This is a serious impact with enough force to fracture the bone surrounding the eyes. This is also known as a blowout fracture and can lead to serious disfigurement and debilitating double vision if not repaired properly. He could have lost his vision or something, and just because he like threw a freaking iron. Jesus Christ. And what's crazy is that when I read this, and even when I watched the film, I rewatched it, I still couldn't stop laughing. And it kind of goes back to how like there are YouTube videos that show people getting hurt badly and it's funny, or people falling downstairs, or and also in Home Alone they use the same humor of people getting injured and it's funny, kind of slapstick humor. And I was like, humans are so weird because we find joy in like other people's torture, and if we don't think about that more, we're just going to keep laughing at torture, and that's kind of fucked up. I don't know.
Oh yeah, you're definitely right. Like it's definitely counter to what we're trying to do on this podcast, which is learn to be better empathizers, because mm-hmm. this type of humor is like an antithesis to that idea, which is that instead of empathizing with the pain they're experiencing, we're laughing at it because we think it's really mm-hmm. funny.
And it's kind of weird how we naturally do that, but we always have to like think a little harder, or I think it's important for us to like spend a little bit more time thinking about like how that person could feel and how actually kind of weird it is that we're like laughing at them falling down some stairs and getting hit by an iron.
Yeah. If you stop for even a second to think about what kind of pain they're going through, it entirely changes the experience of watching this film.
It does. It makes it really sad when they drive away in a cop car. I don't know why, but that really like affected me for some reason at the very end. And yeah.
Another thing about this film, which I encountered as I was trying to do some research for this podcast, was that it really does not give us any sort of backstory on Harry and Marv. And even as I was doing my research, I just really couldn't find any information about their upbringing or their lives or anything that wasn't provided directly from what was going on in the film, which made it really difficult to try to empathize with them and think about their experiences. But despite that, there was kind of one theme that I thought was very, very clear throughout both of the films, Home Alone and Home Alone 2, which was this the idea of differences in class, whereas Kevin is clearly from an incredibly rich family and clearly has a lot of money and privilege and resources. And Harry and Marv, on the other hand, even though we don't know that much about them, they are at a time in their life where they don't have a lot of money. They aren't very intelligent, so they probably didn't receive much of an education. So they're in very different places in their life. I don't know. I just thought that that contrast was very apparent.
Right. Yeah. And we're not trying to say that like if you grow up in a low-income family or something that you will become a thief. No, it's just based on like sociological evidence, right? To live your life in this unjust capitalist society, when you come from lesser means, it's more likely than others to need to commit crime to live and survive and be a human.
It's really easy when you have a lot of money to say it's not okay to steal. But when you have no money and you have no food and you're in a very difficult situation, it's a lot more difficult to say it's not okay to steal.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Your circumstance can dramatically change the way you perceive and understand the world and what your priorities are. And it's important to recognize that. We don't know what Harry and Marv's life is like exactly, but people who grow up in rich, privileged, well-off families are much less likely to be stuck in a situation where they have to resort to crime in order to get the things that they need in order to mm-hmm. survive and live a decent lifestyle.
There's evidence, like in the first film especially, that they really don't give a fuck about the working class. First, when the cop comes to their house, they like completely ignore him. And then also when they're trying to leave for the airport, there's this guy who I think works on the phone lines and is trying to tell the mom, your phone lines aren't working, blah, blah, blah. And both like the cop and that guy are kind of like in the working class, but they just kind of ignore them and not like really care about who they are as people. And then they get into their bus, their vans, and they're able to afford like 10 freaking kids to be able to go to Paris, France. And I'm like, first of all, why would you even try to do that? Like, going to Paris, France is fun, but like to bring 10 kids there, like what the hell? But then I'm also like, that's a lot of freaking money. Wow, just to like get that many kids there, like what? And then they're also like in, the parents are in first class on the flight. And I'm like, wow, like it's a very big contrast. Like Kevin's family can afford to go to Paris, France, and Harry and Marv are stealing things on Christmas. And they have this really rundown van. They really don't look that great. And it's a huge contrast. And on the other hand, too, like in my synopsis, I kind of said that like Harry and Marv are kind of, they're not that sharp. They just kind of like keep trying to rob a house and not being very successful at it. And I was like, well, what other careers can these guys do? I don't know. And how do they live? They have to look at all of these beautiful houses with a bunch of kids in them that are growing up with everything. And yeah, I'd probably get the urge to rob a house. Harry and Marv have to work hard to rob people, probably to have, I don't know, to have more, to be able to have stuff, to be able to have some benefit or some gain.
Yeah. People with a lot of money and privilege often have a difficult time understanding how difficult it is for people who don't have a lot of money and privilege and education to find a good job and to hold that job. And that there are just so many circumstances surrounding being poor that make it so difficult to get mm-hmm. out of poverty.
And Harry and Marv have probably very much justified that. Like, look at all these a-holes with nice houses and we gotta work hard at getting what they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're not stealing from the poor folks. They're stealing from the people who are so rich that, like, would their lifestyle even be affected by the amount of stuff that Harry probably and Marv not. Are
and stealing. What if they're Robin Hood and we just can't see it?
Yeah, that's a possibility, I guess.
There's really no evidence for that, but whatever. Just the fact that they do steal from the rich. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's an unlikely circumstance, but maybe.
Guys, it's Robin Hood.
They do seem pretty greedy yeah. overall. Another thing I was kind of thinking about was how poorly Kevin is treated by his own family. At the beginning of both films, he is basically punished for crappy things that his siblings did. And no one will, his mother and his father and his siblings, no one will come to his defense. He's clearly just reacting and trying to take care of himself despite of what other people are doing to try to harm him. Yet he's the one who's constantly getting punished. It's easy to understand why he is the one that's getting left behind. His family clearly doesn't seem to care much about him. And to me, it feels like that's the kind of upbringing that could lead someone to feel outcast and alone and lead them to, I don't know, potentially be at higher risk of mm-hmm. a life of crime. I wonder if Harry or Marv had a similar experience growing right. up. But then I wonder about what's the difference between them. Well, Kevin's family has mm-hmm. lots of money. Even if Kevin feels outcast, he will always have that safety net of tons of money, which gives him the opportunity to get a good education, probably have connections to get a good job, always have the security of having a place to sleep and have access to food. And just the fact that he has money makes him just that much more likely that he will have success in his life. Whereas when someone like Harry or Marv grows up in a similar situation, they don't have all those safety nets. It's so much harder for them to be able to achieve success right. in their life.
Yeah, and even just like right now, not even in how they're growing up, but during the time period that Home Alone takes place, they're both considered outcasts because Harry and Marv are like stealing and they're like deviant individuals in society. Kevin is like a deviant individual and an outcast within his family unit. And I think the point in like finding out what is similar between the protagonist and antagonist is that if you can think about just even like one thing that you have in common with the villain, like in your life, it can help with your perspective and trying to figure out where they're coming from and also create common ground between you and that person, I think. Maybe someone who I don't get along with, for example, like, I think like this person, I don't get along with them. I think our personalities clash. I think that person is very annoying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then when I start to think about, you know, I have acted similar to this before, or I am kind of similar to this person in this way, can kind of help to talk about those problems or like figure out how to resolve it in a better way than just torturing the other person. And so that's what I think is the point of like all of like what's similar between Harry and Marv and Kevin.
Yeah, that's a good wrap up of my class ramble.
Class.
Yeah. Speaking of wrapping things up, I'm interested to hear what your takeaway is going to be from our conversation today about the real world. What can you take away and apply in your life?
You know, I think I jumped the gun because what I just said was my takeaway. Whoops. I guess my takeaway on a more humorous note is that a kid can be more deadly than what they seem. And if I were a thief, I'd certainly try to justify it in my head. Where am I going with this? If I were a thief, I would very much justify it in my head because I would think that all of these rich people have taken away everything. They're like the top 1%. And so if I hear about a thief, maybe I would empathize with them more.
Yeah, I think that my takeaway is kind of along the same lines. My takeaway is that I feel like we always tend to think of criminals as the other, the dangerous people that will never be like them. Those are bad people. And there's a lot of fear-mongering, even right now in the world, about criminals. Coming from our president, talking about illegal immigrants coming over the border and just kind of conflating this idea that criminals or people that break the law are necessarily bad people. But in reality, most people who break the law, most criminals are regular people like you and I, who because of their circumstances were forced into difficult situations where they had to make difficult choices. And that's important to realize. There, a lot of criminals are not bad people. They're just people who have found themselves in situations where they have no other choice, or from their perspective, this is the only choice that they have, is to find a way to support themselves and support their family and to live a somewhat reasonably successful
right
lifestyle.
Like crime is mostly done in desperation
by poor people. That needs some clarification.
What?
This is totally just an assumption I'm making right now, which is that a lot of poor people who have less money and privilege, commit crimes to better themselves. And then there's a lot of crime by rich, privileged people, which is not to better themselves, but just to like give themselves more power and money.
Yeah. That goes back to the conspiracy theory that the dad is a mob boss.
Yeah, there's this Home Alone conspiracy that Kevin's father is a rich mob boss. Yeah. And there's a lot of other conspiracies about Home Alone.
Right. Kind of like the one that kind of has to do with the podcast is that, kind of like the story of A Christmas Carol, Harry and Marv are Christmas spirits to come and remind Kevin of the value and importance of family. Because in the beginning of the film, he's like, I want my family to disappear. And then Harry and Marv come to show him what it's like if your family isn't there. And that also explains why for so long throughout the movie, they're so resilient to all of the injuries. And they don't like instantly die like you think they should have, because they're spirits, they're not human. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I like the idea of that conspiracy theory because it means that people learned a nice lesson and no one got tortured right. to the point of near death.
It's a very nice one, huh? I'm getting sucked into conspiracy theories, so we better stop this podcast before I start talking about more.
Yeah, that's a good point. So to end the show, we sort of wrote our own poems. We're kind of trying something that'll hopefully be fun. We took The Night Before Christmas and we each wrote our own interpretations of it. I wrote an interpretation of it from the perspective of a rich white families like Kevin's, and Tiana, you wrote the perspective from someone who is less yes. privileged, like Harry right. and Marv.
A person with lesser yep. means.
We have not shared these with each other. We didn't work nope. too terribly hard on them.
Just, you know, yeah. Okay, I'll go first, because mine is more subtle, but then you can kind of see the cool contrast between mine and Joe's, probably. Okay, here we go. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The socks were hung by the door with the broken knob with care, in hopes that at least... You're making me laugh. Okay, that's okay. In hopes that at least one present soon would be there.
This is depressing.
I don't know why we're laughing. I just, the ridiculousness of it. All right. The siblings were nestled to keep warm in their beds while visions of no late payment on the heat bill in their heads. And Mama in her... This is ridiculous. Okay. And Mama in her $2 slippers and I in my cap had just settled our legs for a long winter's nap. When on the busy street...
Wait, sorry. What? They just settled their legs?
No. Their justification was like, well, they worked really hard all day, so they needed to rest their legs. Oh,
okay. Right. Okay, that makes sense.
All right. When out on the busy street there arose such a clatter, I sprang... Sorry. I sprang from the bunk bed to see what was the matter. Away to the cracked window, I flew like a flash. This one's... Okay. Pulled up the shutter and moved away the dusty stash. But I don't know what it's a stash of. I just had to find a word that rhymed with flash. And stash kept coming into my head, and now it sounds like a stash of something. I don't know.
Right. You could have just said sash, like the original line.
But that sounded too rich.
Like a window sash.
That sounded too rich to me to have a sash on on some very fancy window things.
You know what's funny is I make the same reference, in, but I do it intentionally in my poem.
The moon on the breast of the new fallen snow gave the luster of midday to run down cars below. Okay, now here's where it starts talking about St. Nick. So, when what to my wondering eyes should appear, what a miniature sleigh with an 89th year, blah, 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 St. Nick, St. Nick, St. Nick, dancer, prancer, blah, blah, blah. And then the twinkling, and there was a roof, and then the prancing and pawing of each little hoof, and blah, 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 St. Nick. All right, St. Nick came. That's what you need to know. All right. Down the fire escape, St. Nicholas came with a bound. And then blah, 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 St. Nick, St. Nick, St. Nick, St. Nick. And then he filled all the socks, then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and... What? That's a weird line. Okay, aside of his nose, okay. And giving a nod up the fire escape, he rose. He sprung to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all and to all a good night." The end.
Nice. So I struggled with this a little bit because it already sounds like it was written by a rich white family. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in the hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of financial security danced in their heads. Mom in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the perfectly manicured lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew with a flash, ready to yell at some kid smoking hash. But to my surprise, when I looked down below, I didn't see hooligans in the fresh snow. Then what to my wondering eyes should appear but an old homeless man with a great big white beard. He's coming to rob me, then run away quick. Oh, wait, just a moment. Never mind. That's Saint Nick. So up on the rooftop, the reindeer, they flew with a sleigh full of toys and Saint Nicholas, too. Hey, Alexa, don't worry. Turn off the alarms. It's just a rich white man. He'll do us no harm. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney Saint Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed in all fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. I wanted to yell, "Dirty boots off my carpet!" Then he took off his shoes and walked right across it. He opened his bag to pull out the contents. For his sake, he better have brought lots of presents. First one, then two, then 10, then 20. Finally, at 50, I thought, now that's plenty. He spoke not a word, but went straight to work and filled all the stockings and turned with a jerk, and laying a finger to the side of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh and to his team gave a whistle, but away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "Merry Christmas to all, but especially the wealthy."
Only the wealthy. Good night. That was good. I like the extra oomph of snobbery that you conveyed, like, to other people, right? That was cool.
That's how I imagine insanely rich experience Christmas.
Yes. Cool. Oh, and also, before we end, special shout out to my coworker Katie, who recommended that we do an episode on Harry and Marv, because she said her kids really like it, like Home Alone.
Yeah, hey, thanks, so. Katie.
Yeah, thanks, Katie.
I think this was a lot of fun. And with that, thank you for listening. You can connect with us on Twitter at NextDoorVillain, or if you have your own thoughts, you can shoot us an email at nextdoorvillain@gmail.com. This episode, as all episodes are, was produced by myself, Joe Anderson, and Christiana Hennings. And
Artwork by Erica Nitschke.
Yep, artwork by Erica Nitschke. And we would love if you could leave us a review, especially on Apple iTunes. It really helps other people to find the show. And we just love constructive criticism.
We do. We're very used to it from years of speech. So we have we have thick skin, so just rip us apart.
Yeah, or say good stuff. Yeah. That's what I like. Anyways, we'll hope to see you again in a couple weeks with our next episode.
Yeah, a good one.